from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright
lights. With tonight's guest, educator and author of The Great Cultural Awakening, D. Paul Schaefer.
Night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, chant and kirtan singer-songwriter Johanna Beekman. I am Mark Legere, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
A couple of weeks ago, I had the pleasure of being a keynote speaker for the 25th anniversary of the Shume Arts Council in Pasadena. My keynote address was titled Finding Your Voice. And Shume is a spiritual organization which applies the wisdom and insights of the spiritual leader, whom its members refer to as Meshu Shama, who was Japanese. He's no longer with us. And therein lies the reason I'm sharing this tonight, because Japanese is a culture that I'm not very familiar with, although I have been exposed to certain aspects of the culture growing up. Anyway, after the keynote address, and after spending a couple hours at least greeting people afterwards and answering questions and taking pictures, I grabbed my bags when I thought we were all done, and I was heading out. And a lovely lady came up to me, and I didn't understand her. She said something about I was invited for tea. And at first I assumed she was going to give me some tea to take. And I said, sure, I'll have some tea. And so she walked me over to an area that was set up, I didn't know, but for a tea ceremony of sorts. And she took my bags and invited me to sit down. And several of the people that had lingered came and stood behind me to see what was going to happen. And what happened was something that almost brought me to tears. I had never experienced anything like that before. The man who was doing the tea ceremony, it was explaining to me different aspects of what he was doing and what I should pay attention to and what I should know. And he warmed, he took cold water with a bamboo, I don't know what to call it, actually. And he warmed it, and then he took the water that was warmed and then put it in the bowl, and then he stirred it one way and then stirred it the other way, and that was to warm the bowl. And then he started to make the tea, and when he handed it to me, he handed it to me in a certain way, and I went to go pick it up, and right away, somebody else knew. I didn't know what I was doing. And so I was told that the cup has a face, and I pick it up, and I thank the person that gave me the cup, and then I turn the cup or bowl 45 degrees and drink so that I'm not drinking from the face. I tell you, I have never, ever in my life experienced anything like that. And I felt so honored, and it felt like such a special moment. And all I did, in essence, technically, was have three sips of tea. That's it. But the experience felt like I was immersed in culture. I felt like I knew the people that had invited me to speak for them better by having that moment with them. And I couldn't have appreciated it more.
This is such a profound area of disconnection in society today. Ancient culture, modern cultures, these sacred, ceremonial, traditional, participatory, connected aspects are so prominent, and they feel different, and they enhance the experience, but they also bring you together in ways that we don't get at the fast food drive-through.
Good point, Mark. And that's why I chose to share it today, because our episode is called Join the Great Cultural Awakening. This is our episode 787. And we're featuring our guest, who's an educator, an administrator, an advisor, and author of The Great Cultural Awakening. So, D. Paul Schaefer, welcome to the Life Changes Show and this exciting conversation.
Thank you very much, Filippo. And it's a pleasure to be with you this evening to talk about one of my very favorite interests, and that is the culture and cultures of ourselves, our families, our communities, our countries, and indeed the world as a whole. And without going farther about that at the moment, I must say that the Great Cultural Awakening is very much related to the experience, the cultural experience you had in Japan. There are two very significant ways of thinking and talking about culture and cultures. The first, as we know and we're quite familiar with, are the arts, the humanities, the heritage of history, some of the finer things in life, sports, and so on. And the other way is culture as a whole, or a total way of life. The interesting thing about tea ceremonies in Japan is that they really touch on both of those aspects of culture, because tea ceremonies, as we know, and you experienced in more detail than many of us have had the pleasure to, have a great deal to do with the arts, and certainly what we might call the ceremonial arts, which exist in all countries of the world. But at the same time, they have a great deal to do with the overall way of life of people. So tea ceremonies are not just a ceremony involving tea. They're really symbolic of something that's very basic, something that's very fundamental about the culture of Japan as a whole, or way of life. I think you're very, very fortunate in the United States to have a person like Ken Burns there. He's a terrific documentary filmmaker, and his work is basically to increase, broaden, deepen, and enhance our consideration, understanding, and knowledge of both these partial and holistic understandings of culture. Ken Burns, as you know, has produced a series of films on such aspects in the United States as the Civil War, jazz, country music, baseball, Jackie Robinson, Statue of Liberty, the Roosevelts, national parks. These are all particular parts of American culture, but particular parts that are not only very popular with large segments of the population, but also speak to American culture as a way of life. And they give you insights into the way of life of Americans and American culture, not only there in the United States, but also in all other parts of the world. And I mean, it's such a fascinating experience, like the experience you just explained with respect to tea ceremonies, to go to other countries in the world and experience their symbols, their metaphors, their rituals, their customs, their traditions that may be different than our own, but have something very important to tell us about their cultures and their ways of life in both the narrow artistic and broader holistic sense.
So what I was sensing that some of these were customs, and yet you might be saying that this is what culture is, that the customs, like, you expanded my view of culture. So could you add to that, please? I know it's not just the arts and it's not just way of doing, but could it be even how they handed me a business card, each of them, and they held it with both hands, and it was very, not just proper, but deliberate. Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, I resonate with that. We've had similar experiences in our own cultural experiences for any traveling we've done outside a country, and maybe encountered customs and traditions that are different than our own. And we get the sensation that this is very meaningful to the people living in that,
yes,
that culture. So that's a very important dimension of it. But more generally speaking, when we think about culture as a whole or a total way of life, we're also including their people's worldviews, values, beliefs. I mean, some of the big issues that have to do with how we go about coming to understand and come to grips with what our cultures mean to us at a much deeper, broader, and more fundamental level. Interestingly, that you raise this point, because this is really what my book, The Great Cultural Awakening, is all about. I believe that there is a great cultural awakening taking place in the world, and indeed all countries in the world. And it's coming from different areas, from different groups and individuals, and making different kinds of statements. When we think about the Great Cultural Awakening, what immediately comes to mind to us is obviously the indigenous peoples of the world, the black peoples of the world, the people from colonized countries in Africa, Asia, Latin America, the Caribbean. These are all manifestations of very deep cultural experiences and cultural transformations, because what's going on among those people is a reconnection with their original cultures in most cases. We know how they've lost their cultures, but what's going on for them now is that they're starting to reconnect with their cultures, and as such, reconnect with their languages, with their traditions, with their roots, with their customs, with their values that have been lost over the centuries, but somehow have always been retained as best possible. And now that they're reconnecting with them, well, when they're reconnecting with their cultures in this sense, they're reconnecting with their cultures as ways of life, and not just artistic practices or products or music or theater. It's something much deeper and bolder and more important than this. At the same time that this is going on, we're also finding that a lot of people are talking about the need in the world for transformational cultural change. And transformational cultural change, unlike cultural change generally, is something that goes much deeper into the richness and diversity and importance of cultures in the world. Organizations are starting to see themselves in many parts of the world as organizational cultures, which is an area that was brought to light about 25 years ago by Edgar Schein, who wrote a book on organizational cultures. And he said that, you know, organizations go far beyond just producing products and selling products and making money. They are really, in the end, cultures as such, because they depend very deeply on how they treat their customers, how they treat their workers, which has become such a fundamental issue in the world today in many parts of the world, how they conduct their affairs, what their basic assumptions are, how they plan to go into the future. These are all fundamental questions that a lot of organizations are wrestling with now. And we see that happening every day in every part of the world in terms of police forces, hospitals, sports organizations, governmental institutions. All these are organizations that are now delving very deeply into their cultures. At the same time, a third area where we're seeing the great cultural awakening taking place is with respect to the type of tourism that is now evolving in the world. I think there is a difference between tourism in the general sense of people that sign up for a trip and go from one country to the next and one town or city to the next and have experiences and then move on. And what we might call today cultural tourists, which are people that do a great deal of research before they go to a country. And you could think now about how much education they can get through the digital technologies that are available for this. But they go into a lot of depth in trying to understand what the culture is all about, the tea ceremony, for example, in the case of Japan, before they go. Then they go there expressly to have those types of cultural experiences. And then when they come home, they document those experiences, and those experiences then start to turn up in their own lives. So they've learned something in other cultures so that they can use at home that tends to enhance their own experiences in their own lives. So this is really, I think, a very, very exciting time in the world to be experiencing culture in general and cultures and civilizations in particular.
Paul, before we take a quick break, I think it's fascinating that you in particular are talking about culture. And the reason I think I say you in particular is because when we think of where we're going in the future as a nation or as a world, we talk in terms of economics. And we talk in terms of GOP and all of that and currency and so when is you started your education in economics and you taught economics, what happened that you turned to culture?
Well, it's a long story, but in a nutshell, this is what's happened. I taught principles of economics, the history of economic thought, and developing countries, as they were called at the time. It's now international development. And I learned an enormous amount from that about how the world is dominated by economics and economies and economic growth at its very core at the present time. Later in life, I began to call that an economic age that was started with the publication of Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations and has gone on up to the present day. I think we're still living in an economic age. And I think that's the greatest human achievement in the world because it's brought billions of people and many countries out of poverty and made it possible for them to experience the standards of living and quality of life that have never been popular earlier. At the same time, the problem in this regard, and this is why I moved into the cultural field 60 years ago, is that this world was made to really to produce goods, services, and monetary and material wealth. It was not designed to experience the problems we're coming into contact with today. Climate change, global warming, the environmental crisis, huge disparities in income and wealth, conflicts between different organizations, different countries, different races, and so on. And this is because, precisely, in the economic age, the economists that developed the economic age were so preoccupied with developing the economic system that they ignored the context within which economics and economies are developed. So very little consideration was given to the environment, disparities in income and so on. And that's why I'm arguing at the present time that it's imperative for us now to move out of the economic age, as important as it is, and move into a cultural age.
Yeah, so important that in the book, The Great Cultural Awakening, you say that we can experience a real, quote, paradise on earth if we enter a cultural age. So when we come back, we want to talk about that with our guest, D. Paul Schaefer. And after that, we are going to have our Ask Dorothy segment, and then we will be joined by our performance guest, Johanna Beekman, all on the Life Changes Show, online edition, right after this.
Want to connect with amazing people who are committed to making a difference? From the Heart Tribe is a platform, community, and movement with the purpose of bringing like-minded humans together to help animals and the environment in order to gain a stronger connection and understanding of the world around us. They are dedicated to effectuating positive change by empowering individuals to organize meaningful and engaging experiences that build compassion for animals and the natural environment. Their founders and members' passion is to inspire others to actively get involved in their homes, their communities, and the world, to raise awareness about the issues we face, and most of all, to be part of the solution. Through their efforts, they have also accomplished some amazing and tangible achievements. Their Pickup for Paradise beach cleanups have collected over 50,000 pieces of foreign debris. And also, thanks to animal rescue and recovery volunteers, over 30% of the volunteers have become vegan or reduced their meat intake. Daily habits make a big difference. Please join any of their upcoming events by going to fthtt.org and signing up for their newsletter. You can also follow on Instagram and Facebook at From the Heart Tribe.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show, broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We are back, and we are speaking with D. Paul Schaefer about The Great Cultural Awakening, which is his book. And we want to give a thank you and a nod to Ashfaq Ishak, who is a previous guest and who is head of the International Child Art Foundation, who introduced us. So thank you, Ashfaq. And with that, I saw a video recently, and I was going through a bunch of things, and I unfortunately didn't stay to watch very much of it, but I got the gist. And the gist was the chef came out and he spoke to the waiters and waitresses and said, everybody talks about the chef and how great the chef is. He said, but that's nothing if the service and the experience isn't good. And so you all are very important, at least 50% of the experience for our customers. So I just thought of that because I'm thinking what a country has to offer as far as its natural resources and all of that is one thing, but the experience of life in that country, or for that matter, for all of us in the world, that is at least 50% important, right, Paul?
I agree with you entirely about that. And you've raised a very interesting question, I think, that goes to the connection between economics and culture. I think we know that economics and economies, in the sense in which they've been practiced in the past, cannot be perpetuated very long in the future, because they're just devouring resources at a gargantuan rate. One of the interesting thing about some of the experiences that we were talking about earlier in the show is that many of the activities that go on, in certainly in the culinary arts, but also in the musical arts, in the environmental arts and the crafts and so on, a lot of them involve experiences rather than the production of products. And experiences, unlike products, don't use as resources. So there's no, they're not as capital or material intensive as activities in most economic systems. Sitting listening to a concert, for example, is another good example of that. We're not using up resources when we listen to a concert of music performed by some symphony orchestra or outstanding singer or composer. These are indeed experiences, and they're experiences that not only use fewer resources, but go much deeper into our lives and much deeper into the development of our spiritual understandings and satisfactions, our ability to develop compassion for other people and other situations. I mean, there's just so much here now that's available to open up and explore that will take us into the new domains and the interesting activities that would go on in a cultural age compared to an economic age.
So paradise on earth?
Paradise on earth, I think, is there for us to take. A good friend of mine who's a cultural scholar said that there is a paradise on earth. I agree with him totally. I've experienced that paradise on earth in my own case sufficiently to make the argument that there's so much there to experience. And it exists because all the different cultures and civilizations in the world, from the individual level to the family level, town level, city level, regional level, national, international level, they all contain fabulous experiences, fabulous opportunities for us to find enjoyment and fulfillment in our lives.
And understand each other as well, right?
Better. Absolutely, because what they say in the final analysis, that the most important thing about culture and cultures and civilizations is that they connect people. And in connecting, they help to eliminate the polarizations and separations and divisions that go on in the world.
Paul, you've mentioned corporations a couple times, and we don't have to talk about corporations per se, but in a corporation or in a government, let's say, at least the structures that we currently have, one would expect that an economic person would run that business or that organ or that company, the nation. But is there a leader that, what kind of a leader, what does that leader look like that also brings in the cultural aspect?
I think it's a very, very important question at this particular juncture in history. One of the chapters in the book, The Great Cultural Awakening, is on the stakeholders. And I think the stakeholders are really three groups. The first is obviously the arts and cultural group. Second group is the government group. And the third group is ourselves as citizens. I think that what's very much needed in the world now in the second group, the government and political group, is new types of political leaders. Political leaders that we've had a series of political leaders in historically that first came out of the law and were basically lawyers in most cases. Now, in many parts of the world, they're businessmen, which is a reflection, of course, of the economic age in which we're living in, because they're pushing for economic developments. In the cultural age, my argument is, and it's developed in detail in the book, is that we have to develop leaders and politicians that come from a cultural background rather than a legal or business corporate background. And that means that they have to be able to see the world in cultural terms rather than in economic or other terms.
Or at least as half and half.
Half and half, and hopefully more. I mean, there are cases in Europe where the presidents of European countries have been composers or poets or scholars, and they perform very well.
Oh.
Maybe we should be looking at some of those examples.
Wow. Oh, interesting. Well,
We're aware, for example, that Zelensky in the Ukraine comes out of an artistic background, interestingly.
interestingly. So you say also, as we're bringing this great conversation to a close, you also say how we can start with not just in our communities or our town, but really within ourselves. There's a curiosity, I think, that starts within ourselves. What is that curiosity that we might want to espouse?
It's a curiosity about our cultures. One of the earlier and most important chapters of the book is a chapter on people or cultures. So this is where it starts with, is with us. Goethe said a long time ago, live in the whole, live in the good, and live in the beautiful. And I've always used that as my motto for people or cultures, because I think it says so much about what culture really means in terms of individuals. But next, the following chapter is about children, parents, homes, and families. And going forward into the future, this is one of the most essential developments, I think, that is necessary in the world. We have to get to children through their experiences at home and give them a good, solid cultural education, not only in their own cultures anymore, but also in the cultures of other people in other countries. And it's possible to do that now because of the digital technological changes that have taken place in the last 20 years. There's so much we can access in terms of the cultural experiences in different countries in the world. We can fly over their countries and see their cities. We can drop down and walk their streets. We can walk into their museums and galleries. We can enjoy their festivals. So if we really give the in-depth consideration to how children should be properly educated from a cultural perspective, I think we couldn't be talking about different types of citizenship, rights, and responsibilities in the future.
And one last question. If we don't have a culture, or we don't identify with any culture in particular, or we might feel like we either don't know our families or feel displaced, where do we start then?
That's a very difficult question to answer, but my answer, and this is from my own perspective, is start with music.
With what?
Start with music.
Music.
I think music is
Wow.
one of the most important sources and experiences in the world. I think you could learn an enormous amount about cultures through music. There's an article on my World Culture Project website on the power of music, which is all about that very possibility that there's enormous amount we could learn from all dimensions of life by getting deeply involved in music, and it can also sort of provide the way and the direction for the future.
Wow, I like that, Paul. So the book, The Great Cultural Awakening, is available where books are sold. It's also available at the website that Paul just referenced, and that's worldcultureproject.org. There is lots happening at that website, so worldcultureproject.org. And if you miss that, you can go to Life Changes Show and find D. Paul Schaefer's page on our website and learn much more about him and find his website and links there, including a little video of him talking about his new book. So, Paul, thank you so much for bringing this conversation in the way that you're doing to the world. I couldn't agree more. We are in need of a great cultural awakening.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Filippo, for having me on the show tonight. May I just add that for people that are listening to the program and like the book, you might also want to visit Amazon.com there in the United States. There's a great deal of information about the book on that book on that site as well, and it can be accessed very easily there.
And a couple others of your books as well, for that matter. So with that, a big thank you to you, Paul. D. Paul Schaefer, what a pleasure. All the best.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Paul. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Nancy, and I have been having some experiences that I simply cannot explain. I am seeming to know things that are going to occur before they occur. My family tells me that this means I am psychic and that that is difficult for me to believe. Could my family be right about this? And if I am psychic, how can I be more cognizant of my abilities and put them to work for me and for the others?
Dear Nancy, I believe that all humans have psychic abilities, even though most do not recognize this fact. Over the years you and I have known one another, you have revealed that you're highly intuitive. And the word intuitive is a synonym for the word psychic. There are also several other expressions that people use, like my sixth sense, my spidey sense, my gut feeling, and many similar phrases to describe that humans have abilities that aren't taught us or talked about enough. Although I believe we all have the ability to be psychic or intuitive, I also know that many do not go there in their minds and acknowledge their abilities. So I'm happy to hear that you are ready to explore this aspect of yourself. One of the best ways to begin this journey is to do research on this subject, and I'm happy to say that I found many amazing articles on what it means to be psychic and how to develop this gift of insight to better serve you. You might want to start with these two websites, as I love what they have to say on this subject. www.alittlesparkofjoy.com/psychicabilities and www.exemplore, that's exemplore.com. Once you've done the research, and if you discover this is something you truly wish to further explore, I look forward in assisting you in doing so.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you and your spidey senses want to ask Dorothy a question, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And we have our performance guest coming up right after this, Johanna Beekman, all on the Life Changes Show Online Edition, right after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening, someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential,
Find out more. Go to DorotheDonahue.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show, broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We're back, and our performance guest is a singer, songwriter, chant, kirtan artist, recording artist, and so much more, and yoga teacher, actually, and so much more still. Welcome, Johanna Beekman, to the Life Changes Show.
Hi, it's great to be here with you.
Hi, it's great to have you here, Johanna.
Yeah, what a great topic.
Well, interestingly, where I didn't expect that, we landed on music and the importance of music, and how perfect that you're here, because you have music in every culture. Like, you've
Absolutely.
Done music, right?
Yeah. When Paul was talking, I was reflecting on my life journey and how really I did have the opportunity of being exposed to all cultures growing up, because my parents were very interested in world things before it was available on the internet. They were traveling all over the world, and my dad was a percussionist bringing home drums from Cuba and going on drum retreats. And, you know, I was exposed to that and Hinduism. And, you know, I went to an interfaith congregation where we got to choose our own spiritual path called the Unitarian Fellowship. It's not even technically a, you know, they don't even call themselves a church in my community, because it's really, we learned in Sunday school about Jesus and Buddha and Krishna all in the same breath. And that was really, really wonderful for me to have the experience of getting to know my brothers and sisters, whatever we look like.
Well, actually, and you've used that.
Yeah, it's actually turned into my whole life dharma, or calling in West, we would say that, but dharma in the language of yoga is, it's like this path that you see that there's other paths, and then you just keep walking this one path. It's like you can't even change the path. It's what you're supposed to do in this life. I feel like for me, it is the intersection of music, culture, and spirituality has been my life journey in creating my own culture, because I am an American-born human. And I actually studied ethics of diversity and majored in women's studies because I was really interested outside of the musical world in how we are so diverse and how we can get to know each other. And my first song actually was called Just a Little More Love. And it was about how we could bring more love into the world to help the environment, to help our relationships with each other, to heal the divide. And this is, you know, this is 20, like many years ago. And here we are, we're still waking up.
Yes, the great awakening. You know, actually, so I was surprised to hear you say that you are human, because you were born from a pumpkin, I understand.
Oh, I did share a little personal story. That was an inside joke. We go way back to, you know, not too long ago. But okay, yes, I will tell that story. Good prompt. So yes, I was born by pumpkin.
But not in a patch.
So I hail from Oregon, and there's a retreat center called Brighton Bush Hot Springs here, and a great spiritual teacher that had traveled to India to learn about the culture there and brought back a lot of chanting and different teachings, named Ram Dass, aka Richard Alpert, previous to that reincarnation for him. We may know him from his book called Be Here Now. And he was there. It was Halloween. My mom was dressed as a pumpkin. That's where the pumpkin comes in. And he put his hands on her belly and blessed her going to be born baby, me. And part of his teachings is the chanting of India. So we're, again, circling back to culture and music. So fast forward a little bit, I write my first song about love when I'm 9 years old. Just a little more love, that's all we need. Just a little more hope for the world to see, and so on. And then as a teenager, I was going through my, you know, my goth phase and, you know, did the whole all black thing. And my dad was doing sound for Krishna Das and again, Ram Das.
Oh,
and
wow.
Krishna Das is another man who went to the India to learn the chanting practice from a teacher called Neem Karoli Baba and brought it back. And so I got to learn, and it planted a seed during that kind of rebellion from where I came from. The culture that I came from is multicultural, in just that we learned about all of those things. The apple tried to not fall close to the tree. But I ended up a musician like my family, learning about all these cultures and really steeping myself in the yogic tradition, specifically in my adult life. And the music of the Black Gospel Church somehow crept in there. I had a really incredible opportunity as, again, a teenager, young songwriter, around, you know, in the same few year period. So it kind of got in the same part of my brain, I think. Reverend Isaiah Jones from a very famous band called The Fifth Element that wrote a song called The Age of Aquarius that we all know.
Mm-hmm.
He was the keyboard player, and he came via Los Angeles. He moved from Los Angeles after touring the world with that band to my little whitewashed town in Oregon. And he, Spirit had told him to move and to this town and teach the people to have faith. And that included singing, moving our bodies, and clapping at the same time. Now, I don't
That's
know
radical.
If you know this. It's totally radical. As a white person, like, we don't have rhythm or music, honestly, in our bones unless we learn it. I definitely came in with some, but I'm so grateful to have the multicultural musical background of African drum bass band that my dad, you know, backed me up in high school, to folk singer-songwriter music, to a pop album in my 20s. I've traveled the globe with my music. And it's been such an incredible journey in healing my own heart and my own lack of having a quote unquote culture here in America. If that makes sense. So my favorite saying is, all paths up the mountain lead to the same place.
Wow.
And so I find that music is the great bridger of divides. I have Indian fans that just adore the way that I do this kind of music because it's unique to their culture and it's more of the vibration of that culture, of the heart space, the bhakti yoga practice when I sing kirtan, which is what I've been doing for 10 years.
So we'll talk more about that, but in the meantime, I'm hearing love lives. Why am I hearing that?
Oh, because I sing about love a lot. Let's hear Love Lives. Actually, that is my big activism in my adult life. But that's off my new album called Yoga Soundtracks, Volume 2.
Well, we're going to get to hear it now, thanks to, this is right off the album, actually, so it's pre-recorded here. Here is Johanna Beekman's Love Lives on the Life Changers Show.
Thank you.
Johanna Beekman. Oh, thank you. I am wanting people to know where they can get a hold of you. And so Johanna Sings, J-O-H-A-N-N-A Sings.com. And then she's all over the place, Facebook, Twitter, Spotify. So we have links. She's on Instagram as Johanna Beekman, B-E-E-K-M-A-N. But we have links at Life Changes Show. And then the links are also at JohannaSings.com. So Johanna, I don't know that a lot of people know what kirtan is. And then on top of that, you then do this whole lullaby thing with yoga. I mean, you combine so many things. Well, actually, and you've sung so many genres, and we've talked about that. So how does this moment, how is it looking musically for you? Like, what do you feel like you're bringing?
Thank you. Yeah, so Filippo, chanting is now, actually, chant is a category in the Grammys now, so we should know what kirtan is. We got that, a group of my friends from the Bhakti community, which I'll tell you what that is in a moment, got that in the mainstream. So I'm a voting member of the Recording Academy.
Congrats.
Because of kirtan, actually, ironically. So let's talk about what kirtan is. So yoga, we think of pretzel asana yoga. Asana is like the physical form of yoga, and that's what we think of in the West, is, you know, sweating in a room, you know, all of that. Well, there are actually eight limbs of yoga, and that's only one of the limbs of yoga. And so another limb of yoga is bhakti yoga, B-H-A-K-T-I, and that is the yoga of devotion. And so for me, that is the devotion of song and chant. And in India, a lot of people are chanting these Sanskrit mantras in the vibrational language that are soothing to the nervous system and remind us of who we really are in some way. It's an ancient language that is, it's said to be a remembrance. It's our, in our cellular structure when we're born. And so when we chant, we don't need to know what we're singing to really receive a benefit. And so in the next song you're going to play, I'm just going to be singing pretty simple, Jai Ma, Jai Ma, Jai Shakti Ma. And that is praise to the Divine Mother in all of her forms. And so that, you know, there's an energy behind each chant. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, well, before we play it, I wanted to make sure we also got in the lullaby.
Yeah, actually, that segues really easily. Thank you for reminding me. Lullaby yoga. So I quit music, actually. Another story. I've been playing.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to laugh. Oh, my gosh.
No, it's hilarious, right? Like, we're talking about being this lifelong musician, and I say I quit music.
The nine lives of music for you.
Right, exactly. So I was in my Saturn Returns, the end of my 20s, and I quit music, and I became a yoga teacher, and then I remembered yoga music, and I came back to yoga music, and it became everything for me. But I also was now a yoga teacher, and I was actually hit by a drunk driver, could not move. Doctors said I would not be practicing yoga again, especially in the same ways.
Oh.
And I forgot to tell you that in our pre-interview. And so that brought me back to another limb of yoga. And I was just speaking about that. Bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion, chanting. I could do that without using my body. So I would lay my body, I would lie down in these different restorative yoga poses. Restorative yoga is like bedtime yoga. You use pillows, you use blankets, you prop yourself in comfortable positions and let your nervous system relax, rest, and regenerate. And so I had learned these more powerful subtle body and breathwork practices because I'm an ERYT 500s teacher trainer, so I'm like a little bit more of an advanced yoga teacher. So I had learned some of the deeper practices than I could implement. So I brought two kinds of yoga together, the chanting yoga and the physical yoga, and call it Lullaby Yoga, and I trademarked that, and I've been traveling the country with that and my kirtan and devotional singing in yoga studios, ashrams, sacred spaces all over the country and world for the last 10 years.
Now, people could sign up to work with you online on this?
Yeah, I do private sessions. I do both Free Your Soul's Voice Play Shop, which is a improvisational awakening of the voice. I use improv games and also thought techniques like the work of Byron Katie and different things that are able to reset our preconceived notions of our voice so that we can sing with our authentic sound and find our soul's song. And then I also do private and public yoga classes and lullaby yoga to help people with trauma, PTSD, just general stress, help sleep and depress. It's really powerful. And I have to say, it saved my life in a way. You know, I really am very grateful for the practice, and other people have received the same benefit from these combinations of tools.
Wow. And now you're helping others. So wonderful. So yeah. People can learn about that at Johanna Sings, and that's J-O-H-A-N-N-A Sings. So what is, Jai Shakti Ma, what does that mean?
Jai Shakti Ma is like victory or praise to the Divine Mother in all her forms. So that may be all of nature, all of creation, you know, the nurturing that we receive and give, this energy of the Divine Mother Force. But I like to just sing or listen to the chant and see what it feels like in my body rather than getting into the left brain of it. But there's lots of different chants, you know. Om Shanti is a chant for peace. There's just simple things that we can do to remind ourselves of our true nature, and this is one of them.
So we're going to get to
and Shakti is also, sorry, Shakti is divine feminine life force, and it's often swirling and moves quickly. And then Shiva is its counterpart, and that is more meditative, stable, calm energy underneath. I could go on, but we can sign up for privates for that.
I think we're going to have to. At some point.
Yeah. I look forward to it, Filippo.
We're going to only hear half of the piece, and then the piece is available, and the other pieces are available where music is sold and heard and shared. And there is that. So here is Johanna Beekman's The Earth Beneath Me, or Jai Shakti Ma, on the Life Changes Show.
The earth beneath me, the sky above, this heart that's beating. Mother, won't you carry me, carry me, carry me home?
Oh,
Johanna Sings for sure. That's johannasings.com, J-O-H-A-N-N-A, sings.com, and Johanna Beekman, B-E-E-K-M-A-N, find her on all socials. So go to Life Changes Show page for Johanna Beekman. Johanna, as we're bringing our segment to a close, you have to tell me, is that part of the lullaby yoga thingy?
Yeah, actually.
Oh, I get it.
So I have an online program, and it is lullaby yoga in 5 days. You can do it from anywhere. It's at johannasings.com/5 days, and it's 5 days to come home to you. And I serenade while I teach restorative yoga. So I lead you through a pose or two that you can do anywhere. I've done it in my hotel room all over. You know, you just, I lead you while I sing a song like this to you, and your nervous system just relaxes.
Mm. And that's the simple. Number five, right? 5 days.
Five days. Yeah. The number five, johannasings.com/5 days.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Johanna, thank you so much. What a
pleasure.
Thank
you. I hope you have a beautiful evening, and thank you for your service.
I just did.
As well. Oh, well, I did as well.
So
much
thank
in
you
common
so
already.
Much. So, and looking forward to the next time. In the meantime, a big thank you to Johanna Beekman, and another big thank you to our interview guest, D. Paul Schaefer. And with that, that is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Lejeune, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
Amen.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.